members of both the House and the Senate to meet you personally and to probably set aside any of these fears that we've been hearing over the last 2 or 3 weeks, especially about this five-headed monster that you pretty much described to be. And maybe the process here will, through the course of the meetings, will either confirm or dispense with those fears. This is a joint hearing, as we've mentioned. Hopefully we can conclude. We have a sufficient amount of time today. Hope we can conclude these hearings. If not, we certainly will make time tomorrow and also the next day, if necessary. I'd like to again thank Mrs. Guest, the Chairman of the Public Utilities Commission, for being here, as well as Mrs. Knowles and Ms. Whitaker. For attending. Also, Mr. Farley, the Executive Director, and I understand one of the committee members, Mr. Agee, is that correct?
Agee, that's
Agee,
correct.
Is not able to be with us. The Senate members that are with us today, Senator Ray, Senator Eliason, and the House members, I'll turn it over to Representative Farley to announce the House members that are here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House members present, Representative Millar, Representative Copeland, Representative Hanley, Representative Pierce, and Representative Collins.
You mentioned Representative Copeland?
Yep.
Is in presence, okay. We do have a number of sites. Since this was basically a legislative hearing over the Sunset Review, and there was an interest in pretty much statewide, the intent of the desire of the joint session here was to allow the number of sites to participate in the form of listening in on the conference hearings at this time. We will not be taking any testimony from any of the sites at this time. At a later date, we will be looking at some potential legislation and also further review of the Utilities Commission in terms of their sunset. I would like to go through the agenda. This is the basic format that we will be using. One, the introduction, of course, and then two, I would like to have a comment from the Legislative Budget and Audit Review Committee in respect to the APUC audit that we have before us, an overview presentation from the members of the APUC Commission, comments from individual committee members, and then a question and answer period between the members of the committee and the commission members. There was a concern there that one of the members of the legislature had a potential conflict at this time with Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I do need to report that I have a close personal and business partnership with an executive officer of a company that has cases presently pending before the commission.
Okay, thank you. Noted. There are other commitments there that the other senators have and are not able to be with us, I'm sure with the House members as well. And with the budgetary process going on, there are demands on our time, so people will be coming in and out during the course of the meeting. At this time, I would like to call Merle Jensen, if you will, from the Legislative Budget and Audit to join us up at the table here to walk us through the performance report on the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. If you would, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the second sunset review of the APUC. The first one was performed in 1979. And in that particular report, we had several substantive changes that affected policy regarding APUC. I'm happy to say that many of those have been addressed. And this particular update, 1984, as committee members will notice, is mainly of administrative nature, most of the findings in this report. There has been notable improvement since our last review of APUC. And with the chairman's blessings, I'd like to just go through these particular findings.
Yes, Mr. Jensen, continue.
Our first finding dealt with...
Mr. Jensen, there was a concern mentioned by the sites here that they were having a difficulty hearing, so possibly if you could pull the microphone just a bit closer, that would help. And then also to the other members there, if you would remember to trigger your microphone there so that the additional sites can hear us.
Mr. Chairman... Mr. Chairman, the first finding that we have in our other report deals with a lack of... Mr. Chairman, the first finding that we have deals with the lack of compliance at APUC during this particular audit period. The lack of compliance that dealt with professional services contracting. We felt that based on a review of 37 contracts, we found that approximately 20 of these had some type of either statutory or state administrative manual non-compliance. Some of the various reasons, I won't go into it in detail, but some of the general categories of non-compliance dealt with lack of contract solicitation, periods of performance. There were a couple of cases where services were actually being performed before the effective date of the contract. I believe that the latter part of our review noted that there was a notable increase in complying with contracting administrative procedures. Recommendation number two dealt with improving accountability of program receipts and allocating hearing investigative costs. We're recommending that APUC seek legislation to amend the statute to allow for a more timely billing of those out-of-pocket costs that deal with various hearings and investigations. Currently, AS 4205-651, and I'll paraphrase the first part of it, says that after completion of a hearing, and APUC now has to wait until the hearing is complete or the investigation is complete before they can bill, allocate their billings out. And this complying with this recommendation would enhance revenue collectability and also should simplify their account receivable systems up there, administratively. Recommendation number three deals with we're recommending that they utilize some kind of a topical reference system for commission orders and court decisions. Currently, they file their commission orders chronologically in a chronological order, and they maintain their docket or their case history by a number with reference card by utility name. Decisions from the courts on appeal of commission orders are filed with the related docket, and there's no topical cross-referencing in order to get back to a particular decision that has been made. We feel that implementing this particular recommendation should enhance the efficiency of their operations. The last recommendation that we point out, being another administrative recommendation, deals with, this is a statutory requirement, required by 4205-211 and 4206-220, and it requires them to submit an annual report every February 15th. Over the past 4 years, at least 5 years, I guess 4 years, they've been unable to meet this deadline, the reason being that a lot of the financial information that APUC receives and puts together is received in at such a late date that's beyond their control that there's no way they can get this report out in time. And we're suggesting that maybe a different format should be used whereby their operational information can be accumulated and put together that would coincide with a fiscal budget year, and then the financial information dealing with utilities could be also included for the preceding year, and this would enable the legislature to review the activities of APUC, the operations of APUC, on a more timely manner, and be able to correlate that information with the particular budget that they are submitting for the legislative year. That pretty much winds up the findings and recommendations that we made in this report. Like I said before, the 79 report had more substantive recommended changes in it. Recommendations like the combining the Alaska Pipeline Commission with APUC, which was done. Cable television was eliminated from regulation under certain situations. And that pretty much winds up my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions that any committee members might have.
Mr. Jensen, when was this audit conducted?
This audit was conducted last summer, Mr. Chairman.
By yourself?
No, it was conducted by our Anchorage office.
Do you know if contacted any of the various utilities that are involved with APUC?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the specifics of our procedures that we used up there. I would certainly be glad to take down any questions that I cannot answer and get back to you.
Okay. Do you know basically how the audit was conducted?
In general, a performance audit, Mr. Chairman, in the case of APUC, we would rely, of course, on any prior audit report. We would update that report. We would look at an organization. We would look at the legislative and legal mandates of that particular organization. We would, using that approach, we would go in, look at their activities, look at their operations, correlate the two. In the sunset process, we also have other specific questions that we have to address, dealing with proper hiring and things like that. And we basically use a program approach, tickler file approach, if you wish. In general, that's how our sunset audits are conducted.
Is this what we consider a type of a management audit?
Yes, there's certain facets of this audit that could be considered a management audit, yes.
I guess I'm a little bit concerned there. There were some questions and concerns that were brought up by the different utilities in terms of the basic operations of the APUC and the way they handled various cases and so on, and I didn't see any of this reflected in this particular audit or any suggestions from from your agency that would lead us to some sort of conclusion or direction that we could give or that we could suggest to the APUC.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I could do is if you give me some specific questions, I could try to get back to you. I'm not really sure what the one point I might make, and that is there are certain policy type decisions that that have to be made by the legislature and the governor, and we don't feel that the sunset audit itself, in other words, we are not going to introduce any type of a new concept into what the legislature has already demanded or required, mandated by law. In other words, if the law says that things are to be done in a certain manner, if a particular agency or a commission doesn't particularly like that concept or that policy, we do not address that. We are going to address the operations as close as we can, compare them as close as we can to the law and to the intent of the legislature.
Okay, thank you. If you would remain here, I think there are some questions from some of the committee members here. Senator Ray? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Ray, would you use the...
Yeah.
We'll share this because I'm going to be asking you this question.
Normally, the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee or the Legislative Audit Service makes recommendations as to the operation of boards and commissions, and you aren't chary about giving what you think is to be the operation of the committee or commission, what you think is the proper management. You know, of course, of the attempt by the APUC through their existing regulations to bring in co-ops and regulate co-ops through the regulations, and when they were opted out by statute, and yet I failed to see any mention of that in your audit report. Did you consider that question at all?
Mr. Chairman, this is a question I'm going to have to get back, or an answer I'm going to have to get back to you. I like I said, I must apologize. I'm an auditor here in Juneau. Our Anchorage office did this audit. The field work was, in fact, done by people out of our Anchorage office. We were called at the last minute to come over here, and I'm doing the best I can. We can certainly get our Anchorage people down here to talk to you about some of the more specifics. I have to apologize to Senator Ray. I cannot answer his question.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, not getting on to your case, but you don't seem to be reluctant in other matters such as hairdressers and saying that you don't believe that hairdressers committees should have a hairdressing committees. And the liquor control board, you have various policy matters that you go in depth and at length about. And yet here is one of the prime governing quasi-judicial agencies in the state. And you know, unless you're in the upper room someplace, you know what they've been attempting to do, and yet you have your remarks on it. It seems strange. Perhaps you don't, but maybe the Anchorage office does.
I'll excuse you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Ray. I was a little bit concerned, and I think you put it a little bit more bluntly than I was. I had seen some of the management audits come out before that went quite a bit into detail and were very suggestive. Are there any other questions from any of the committee members? Thank you, Mr. Jensen. If you would remain,
sure.
Pause for some other questions. We've had a presentation of the audit as conducted by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. At this time, we are in the agenda, we are opening the overview or from the members of the APUC, and in that I would expect probably some responses from the Commission to the audit. So if you would want to go ahead, Mrs. Guest, and continue, and then maybe give us an idea about your particular format. If you would remember to use the microphone so that other sites can hear you as well.
Thank you, Senator Zaroff, Representative Navarre, and members of both the House and Senate Committee. We are happy to be here today to respond to not only questions in regard to the specific recommendations of the Sunset Audit, but any additional questions that you have in regard to testimony you have heard or concerns you may have. I think it's appropriate to put the APUC in the proper framework. The APUC has been given its mandate by the legislature. Our statute is AS 4205, which I understand you have copies of, and AS 4206. The former is the regulation of utilities, and the latter is the regulation of pipeline carriers. Our mission basically is in two areas: certification, making a determination that the public or the shippers require the service, and that the utility or carrier proposing to serve is fit, willing, and able to provide the service. In addition, for some utilities, and again, some pipelines, the Commission has economic regulation of those entities. I forgot, I wanted to give you a brief rundown of all the utilities and the pipelines that we regulate because I think it's impressive. We have gas, sewer, water, radio common carrier, telephone, both long distance and local exchange, electric, garbage, CATV, and intrastate oil pipelines. In addition to these main missions, we are required under the Power Authority statute to determine the eligibility of electric utilities for power cost equalization and to determine the amount of subsidy per kilowatt hour. Who is the commission? The commission is appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature. There are five members, four of whom are here today. Our terms are for 6 years, and they are staggered terms. In response to the legislative audit, we were pleased with the review. We believe that the life of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission is extremely important to all within the state of Alaska. We believe that we are providing a service and exercising our responsibilities judiciously. That does not mean that we do not make mistakes. That does not mean that people may, and many times do, disagree with our decisions. But I think it's important for this committee to remember that every decision that the commission makes, because it is a quasi-judicial agency, must be based on evidence. The facts must support the conclusion. I think our response to the recommendations in the Sunset Audit speak for themselves. If they don't, we would be happy to answer specific questions. Basically, we agree with most everything that's said. There's slight disagreement over some of the contract violations. Again, I think it's a matter of interpreting what the rules were at which particular time. We have, in response to the last recommendation, complied, and you were all sent a copy of the 1984 annual report of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. I want to reiterate three things that I think are important for all of us to remember as this agency is reviewed. The first, and you will be hearing this more than once, is that we are a reactive agency. We react to something, and you will hear specifics from my colleagues. As I indicated, we are quasi-judicial. We don't make decisions on what we think. We make decisions based on evidence that is in front of us. And our decisions are appealable to the Superior Court of the State of Alaska. And in the third instance, I would like you to remember this, that the utilities and pipelines that we regulate, generally speaking, and with some exceptions, are natural monopolies. The consumer has no choice. If the consumer wants the service, be it local exchange, be it sewer or water, or shipping their oil, they must ship with a specific utility. And I think that those are important considerations as we begin to look at how this agency has carried out the law as the legislature has written down for us. We each have a brief presentation this afternoon, and I would like to give you a brief introduction of each of my colleagues. There are detailed biographies in the back of the annual report. Susan Knowles has been with the commission for 10 years. She is the lead commissioner in major rate case proceedings, including Alaskom, Cook Inlet Pipeline, and NSTAR. In addition, Susan at this time is president of the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners, an organization whose members are made up of all state regulatory commissioners. So I would ask now if Susan would share some of her reactions and experiences with her responsibilities on the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate and House committees. I'd like to speak to you a little bit about what is or perhaps should be the real job of the commission. Earlier on in this century, legislatures themselves directly regulated the businesses that we now find ourselves regulating. But it turned out that the legislative process wasn't terribly well suited to such a detailed job, and so commissions were established. I think the legislatures also recognized that it was fairly impossible to specify rules to govern every situation that a commission might face. So they decided it would be best to delegate broad authority to commissions to implement the policies that the legislature wanted implemented in specific cases. Our commission, I believe, was created in this classic framework, and the legislature has in fact defined what our duties and powers are. The key elements of our assignment are as follows. Just to refresh your memories, to establish service territories, to assure adequate, safe service and facilities, to set rates, to monitor financial management practices, and to prescribe certain accounting and reporting rules. I'd like to make a few observations about these delegated tasks. First, I think our statute nationally is very much the norm, both in terms of the scope of our responsibilities as well as the generality in which it is stated. Second, the statute assigns equal importance to all of our tasks. In practice, however, our workload tends to be dictated largely by reacting to utility and pipeline requests for changes in service areas and rates. Nonetheless, monitoring the quality of service and management practices of those entities are equally important responsibilities to us under the law. However, because these duties tend to be exercised less often and under adverse circumstances, as evidence may indicate, they frequently arouse criticism from the affected utility management, and I might add, simultaneously, frequently applause from the affected customers. Thus, the adverse testimony you have received should be placed in the proper perspective as you reevaluate this particular element of our duties. I think the bottom line is that the Commission would challenge the management of any utility in which such an investigation has been completed to state that that utility is not better off today than it was before that investigation was performed. Third, and perhaps more than anything to reinforce my previous point about our workload, I would like to place the extent of our investigative activities in some perspective. Since our last sunset audit, which you heard earlier was in 1979, we've had only 9 service or management type investigations. This amounts to about 2 out of roughly 100 dockets that we open every year. That means 98 of the 100 are reacting to cases brought to us by our constituency. Perhaps the issue before this legislature should not be why the commission is doing too much in this area, but is it doing enough? I would also note that many PUCs do this type of service and management audit as a very routine element of their rate cases. We don't have the luxury of those resources and hopefully not the need at this point. Fourth, the powers and duties of the commission are all mutually interdependent. There's no such thing as a reasonable rate for service that is deficient. Thus, there's a direct relationship between the quality and quantity of the service and rates that customers receive. It would also be impossible for this commission to adequately resolve the large number of consumer complaints we receive, and which I might note even our most outspoken critics to date believe is a legitimate commission function, without the broad array of powers that the commission, that the legislature has given us. I'd like to turn now to some brief comments on regulation of co-ops, since this has come up. As you are no doubt aware, the issue of whether or not co-ops should be regulated and all its pros and cons was fully debated at the time of our last sunset audit. And at that point, the legislature adopted what I would characterize as a middle course. Our statute was amended to allow customers of co-ops the option of holding an election to decide whether or not they wanted to continue to be regulated by our commission. We believe that this policy is still viable today. Those co-ops who believe that the commission is meddling or that consumers are otherwise well protected by their own boards, by their management, by REA, or any other elements in their operations need simply put the matter to a vote. Let the consumers decide whether they wish the commission to monitor the effectiveness of management or whether they, in fact, feel comfortable assuming this responsibility themselves. Just by way of background, since that statute was changed, there have been 8 deregulation elections, 6 involving co-ops, of which 4 decided to get out from regulation and 2 decided to stay in. There have also been 2 elections involving investor-owned utilities, and 1 is now not regulated and 1 is continuing to be regulated as a result of the vote of the consumers. We believe that it would be best for the legislature, as it evaluates this question again, to decide in favor or against co-op regulation definitively. We would be most concerned if the legislature decided to nominally continue to regulate co-ops, but so watered down the commission's authority that it basically wasn't able to perform an adequate job. There are 2 reasons, at least, for this. One is, I think it would constitute, in effect, consumer fraud if people had the appearance without the reality of regulation. And 2, it would create artificial differences between utilities based on ownership type, when in fact there may be no real difference in the need for the level of public protection. I'd like to conclude by saying, you, the legislature, define our job, our duties, and it is our responsibility to vigorously fulfill whatever statutorily mandated responsibilities you've given us. I personally believe there's no room for any wishy-washy representation of the public interest once you've told us how you would define it. And all we would ask is the resources and flexibility to perform the task to the best of our ability on your behalf. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Ray.
Is it your intent to listen to all of the people put forward their credentials and then make their points and then ask us later on to bring it up, or do you want us to bring it up now?
Senator Ray, I think I thought about that, and I think probably best to go ahead and let each of the commissioners make a few comments there about themselves, and then we'll go ahead and open it up to questions. I suspect that that's going to be the bulk of our session anyway.
Right.
I'll give them a chance to respond to the audit and also give us a little indication of where they're coming from. Very good. Mrs. Guest, would you continue, please?
Thank you. Commissioner Weatherly has also been on the commission for 10 years and has been reappointed and is also in front of you to be confirmed. Marv holds the engineering seat. He has expertise that is recognized nationally in the area of telecommunications. But I think more importantly for us today, Marv's engineering experience and expertise has been used in every investigation that the commission has undertaken in the 10 years that he's on the commission where there was a question of safety or service reliability. For instance, when the Bethel telephone switch went down and Bethel was isolated for more than a week, that investigation was Marv's docket. In addition, some of you may be aware of the problems in the community of Cole Bay when Northern Power and Engineering lost every generator and every generator that was loaned them, and the people were without power for more than a week. That was Marv's docket. So I would ask Marv now to offer his perspective as far as his responsibilities and experiences over the last 10 years and also as a person who has been reappointed.
Thank you, Chairman Guest. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to direct the major part of my comments with regards to what has drawn the greatest heat and the greatest fire over the past at least week or so, and that's the question of the safety and service standard proposed by the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. And I guess the first, or the starting point in that is, why does the commission at this time introduce safety and service standards? The legislature in 1970, in the adoption of AS 4205, included a section called 291, or labeled 291, and I quote that section: "Each public utility shall," and I underline, "furnish and maintain adequate, efficient, and safe service and facilities." At that same time, the legislature adopted AS 4205-331, which says, "The commission shall," again, emphasis, "establish by regulation adequate, fair, and realistic standards for the measurement of quality, pressure, voltage, and other conditions of utility services, and prescribe reasonable regulations for examination and testing of the service and the adequacy of the devices used to measure it." Now, I guess I'm somewhat mystified, or maybe I shouldn't be, by this concept that's being put forth by some utility managers, and I don't want to paint them all with the same brush, that there should be a set of dual standards in the state of Alaska, that if you live in rural Alaska, for some reason, there should be a lesser standard than if you live in urban Anchorage, or Fairbanks, or Juneau. Chairman Guest stated to you that I covered the investigation of Cold Bay, which I believe, Mr. Chairman, is your district. And I invite you to look at the pictures that were taken at Cold Bay. 5,000 volts of electricity open and exposed to the school children and the members of the Cold Bay community. 5,000 volts. That was not isolated. The pictures tell a horror story that goes throughout Cold Bay. And the commission had to act. We had no regulations. The audit committee, the first time around, said, "You're supposed to have regulations on this." So we developed regulations. And 3 years ago, we circulated those regulations for comment, worked with the industry to develop those regulations. And I'm speaking mostly now of the technical aspects of the regulations. And the industry had some problems. But now you find that they're coming in a new tack. They're coming in, they're saying, these regulations are technically too strict. We can't live with them. They're the same regulations that were before them 3 years ago. And 3 years ago, they could live with them. Now, we're not in the position of forcing these regulations down the utility throat. That's not our purpose. We will go back to the drawing board with the utilities. We have a work session with the utilities on the 26th of this month where we're going to sit down and discuss the technical aspects of the regulations. Possibly it isn't realized either by the utilities or possibly by the legislature. There is a standard in the state of Alaska for electrical utilities and electrical service. And it's denoted by AS 1860-580 under the Department of Labor. Right now, the utilities must bear that technical responsibility. And that's what we're proposing on our regulations. Nothing more stringent than what the state already has as a standard. And why do we have the regulations? Why don't we just forget about it? Let the AVEX of this world go out and put in whatever kind of system they want. Because once you go out in the rural Alaska, and I've lived in rural Alaska, I'm not a utility manager that lives in Anchorage, Alaska, and has never been exposed to life in rural Alaska. And that's why I reject this idea, this concept of dual standards. But once you go out there and you see a hazardous condition, the state of Alaska, the court systems of the state of Alaska, the Supreme Court has said, state of Alaska, you're liable under the Gold Rush decision. You're liable. If someone gets electrocuted out there, you, the state, are liable. Basically, a dereliction of our duties as commissioners and as a commission, that when we find these hazardous conditions, that we do not do what is necessary correct them. And I have to emphasize, these are proposed regulations. Proposed. They've been published for comment, and we will work with the utilities and the public, the consumer as well, to get the right regulations in place. Senator Ray brings up the question, for example, with regards to those who have been opted out of deregulation, why they should be covered. I'm not sure they should be covered. My predisposition right now, as a commissioner, I will probably vote against that. But I want to hear what the public has to say. I want to hear what the utilities have to say, and then I will make up my mind. I have no predisposition on it. So the only words I had to the legislature with regards to the service and safety standards. If you truly believe that there should be two standards, or a lesser standard for rural Alaska, then change our statute. Tell the APUC, put a lesser standard out there. Those people live in rural Alaska. Things are difficult out there, and they can't possibly meet those standards. And then we will act accordingly. We are a creature of the legislature. We have interpreted what you said in 1970. And we're proposing regulations in that regard. Thank you.
The newest member of the commission is Kathleen Whitaker. She was appointed in January. She also will be before the legislature to be confirmed this session. By being the newest, that doesn't mean she has any lesser experience than us. And as a matter of fact, she brings us more. Because Kathy has been a member of the staff for 6 years, a responsibility that none of the current commissioners have, with the exception, I might add, of Commissioner Adjei, who back in the early 70s was an assistant attorney general assigned to the staff. Kathy has rate-making expertise in all utility areas. And I would ask Kathy today, in front of you, as a new appointment to be confirmed and as a member of the commission, to give you her perspective coming from the staff and now being a member of the commission in regard to our responsibilities and how we effect those responsibilities.
Thank you very much. As Chairman has mentioned, excuse me, I have been acting as a commissioner for approximately 2 months. However, what I would like to do is mention a few things which perhaps do in fact go to the legislative audit, as well as some of the comments that have been made or some of the criticisms that have been made in some prior testimony. That, in particular, the one with respect to timeliness of completion of filing. What I'd like to do is mention a few areas that have required an inordinate amount of time on the part of the commission that were required in addition to the normal day-to-day responsibilities of complaints and rate review. And then I do have three areas I can mention which would improve the efficiency of the organization. Behind in all of our cases. We also had a severely crippled engineering staff at the time. This was not that long ago. we successfully initiated and completed a reclassification of our staff positions through an extraordinarily time-consuming in-house effort. We are now able to attract people who are trained in accounting, finance, and engineering fields, although I must admit that we still very rarely can attract anyone with regulatory or utility experience. The fact is, we are the training ground for utility regulation. No sooner did we develop a really effective staff than we were faced with assuming the responsibilities of the Pipeline Commission. Other state legislation which we needed to respond to with implementation procedures included assistance for electric rate subscribers in the form first of power production cost assistance, which then changed to power cost assistance, and today is power cost equalization. All of these required additional staff work, but also work, additional commissioner work, and work in implementation. In fairness, I have to say that the legislature was responsive in providing for staff people to perform the work. However, this did not provide for experienced staff people, and we all had to go through a certain learning process. We also have a great deal of responsibility placed on us through responding to federal legislation. In the early 80s, Congress passed the Public Utilities Regulatory Policy Act, which required the Commission to establish standards and regulations regarding conservation and effective use of energy resources. It required a great deal of time on the part of the Commission. And approximately 3 years ago, the Federal Communications Commission hit the states with major and mandatory accounting changes, including the deregulation of telephone equipment. Suddenly, the consumer could buy some or her own telephone. This is all well and good, but in going out and purchasing a telephone, they expected their telephone rates to drop, since those rates did in fact include rental of utility-owned equipment. This required a significant amount, or has, it still is requiring a significant amount of work on the part of the staff and commissioners in reviewing the redesign of all of the telephone local exchange rates in order to accommodate the deregulation of this equipment. All of these areas are just an example of things that have required a considerable amount of time on the part of the Commission and have not been within the normal scope of our, well, I guess they've become normal since there always seems to be something, but not within what we anticipated to be the normal scope of our responsibilities. And in fact, have had to be reacted to in a very quick manner, which necessitated a lot of reprioritizing. I would like to mention three areas where changes could be implemented, which would significantly improve the effectiveness of the Commission. And I have to preface my remarks here by saying that you have to recognize that perhaps I can speak to these things because of the years that I spent on the staff, and some of these are perhaps areas that the other commissioners would not necessarily have brought up, simply because they have a tendency not to ask for things on their own behalf as opposed to the staff. First thing is a reference system. This was mentioned, I was happy to see, by the Sunset Audit, the legislative audit. Staff has been crying for a reference system for years, certainly since I have been with them. With the problem of not having trained staff in the utility regulation field to begin with, and having a turnover in that staff, it is very critical to have a topical reference system to pass commission decisions. The fact is, the current reference system we have is sitting before you. I mean, this is the walking, talking reference system for commission decisions. And that's not, it's an excellent resource when we can access it, but it really isn't readily accessible, which is also a problem for the utilities. Utilities would be assisted very greatly by being able to refer to past commission decisions in specific areas regarding specific issues in their own rate cases. It would help them immensely in preparing, and it would improve the effectiveness of hearings and proceedings dramatically. Secondly, and this is the area where I believe the other commissioners would normally not say anything, and that is the lack of staff for commissioners, period. Our staff has increased, but it's been the staff that's preparing recommendations to the commissioners. With the increase in workload, the commissioners have not had any increase in assistance to them. They, in fact, are still writing orders. It takes a long time to write an order. And I would ask you to take a look at our hearing calendar. I mean, I tell you, I'm getting a very different perspective as a result of my couple of months in a commission position as opposed to a staff position. There, if you look at the calendar, there's a hearing set for every week for the next 3 weeks. Very difficult, even after you've completed the hearing on a proceeding and, in fact, made a decision. The docket cannot close until the order is out. It's very difficult to get an order out when, in fact, you're constantly in a decision-making mode. You're constantly in hearings. You're constantly responding to requests from everywhere for information. You cannot get an order written. And that is a great deal of the problem in not getting dockets closed. And that also, I guess, speaks to the problem which the legislative auditors mentioned regarding cost allocation. By the time a docket is closed and costs are allocated, it may be a long way time from when, in fact, those costs were incurred, which does increase problems with understandability and collectability. The third area where this commission could improve its efficiency is not one where I would suggest any change, and that is with respect to the nature of this commission, and that is that it is a very responsive commission and very accommodating. Our regulations provide for us to become a very efficient bureaucracy. I, for one, have been fighting that for years, and hopefully we will never turn into that. We go out of our way to help utilities with their filings. We spend hours of time on helping prepare or correct improperly filed rate case requests. We in fact have prepared rate case filings for some small utilities and for power cost equalization requests. We also have not rejected a number of improperly made filings. It is not unusual for a filing to be inadequate, to not have the support, and I'm not talking about just small utilities, I'm talking about the big ones too. And in this area, I think we have been very accommodating, and I think it's to good purpose. I would not like to see that change, but it certainly could. I do have, you know, I have examples in these areas, but I think I've probably spent enough of your time. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Jack Farley, the Executive Director of the Commission, is also here today with an extremely brief statement. Jack was selected by the Commissioners. He is a certified public accountant. He has both public sector and private sector experience before he came to the Commission 5 years ago. In addition to his responsibilities as the Executive Director of the staff of the Commission, he has filled an extremely important void as a result of the merger of the Pipeline Commission with the APUC. And that void was there was no one directing the consultants and the lawyers who were representing the staff of the commission in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System proceedings. We are required to be in those proceedings. We have been in those proceedings in D.C. Jack has and continues to monitor contracts that I guess cumulatively would add up to close to $2 million, which isn't as much as the Department of Law, but it's still a substantial amount of money. In addition, last week, Jack was the only state witness and the expert witness in the TAPS proceedings, which were held in Anchorage, to make a determination of what the permanent intrastate rate should be for shipping oil through the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. So at this time, I would ask Jack to give you some comments from his perspective as Executive Director of the staff.
Thank you, Chairman Guest, Mr. Chairman. Today I would like to state what I believe are the most important duties of the AVUC staff. The staff function is not to be adversary to regulated utilities. We believe a utility must be financially healthy in order to provide reliable and safe service at just and reasonable rates. The AVUC staff is reactive. The bulk of our workload results from requests by regulated utilities and pipeline carriers. Upon a request, staff determines if the request is proper. We are responsible for public notice and investigate to see if the request is in the public interest. We also respond to complaints from customers and the public concerning safety and quality of service standards. An equally important task of staff is to perform duties set forth by statute, such as those concerning power cost equalization. During my term as an executive director of this commission, I believe staff has performed its responsibility as efficiently and as effectively as possible, considering our resources. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think there are some other areas that I know are of concern, but I think it's probably appropriate now for us to respond to questions.
Okay, I think I'm going to go ahead and get into that. I know that there are a number of concerns that the various committee members have, and bear in mind that this is basically a hearing process. It's not an adversarial role, not on the legislative part, and I certainly hope it's not on the commission's part. But there have been a number of complaints that we as legislators have received from our constituents, the various individuals in our district, and to you would be your utilities. And I guess what bothered me a little bit at the beginning was that maybe if we only had a few complaints that things weren't a serious problem. But when these complaints started to come in, more and more, and it didn't affect one area of the state, it was basically statewide, we need to take a serious look at this. The last time that we went through this process here was in 1979. A lot of time, has gone by since that last hearing. Things have changed, people have changed, views have changed. There's been a considerable amount of changes throughout the state. And when I've heard concerns there, I pulled the basic utilities in my district. There weren't too many complaints. But in other parts of the state, there were a considerable amount of concern expressed to us, at least to me, that when we had asked them for some specifics, that they were reluctant in coming up with anything more specific. They were very general. And the reason being, one is that they feared the authority of the commission. Now, when the legislature created the commission, it didn't intend to create an element of bureaucracy that was there to threaten people. Maybe this is a matter of perception, but when we receive concerns like, we don't want to testify because of the threats that we will have to face, or the intimidation by the commissioners or commission, the reprisals that will come upon us in terms of our next hearing, or the basic misuse of authority by the commissioners. Now, we did not get all of these concerns or what we thought should be legitimate concerns from the various utility users throughout the state simply because of this. All I'm doing is I'm relaying that on to you. We did work very much with a utility group that finally had it up to 6 inches above their head, that they just cannot operate with the way the commission is going at this point. And hopefully we can resolve that. This has been basically with the electric utilities, and this has been a concern statewide. And maybe we can try to resolve something or work towards some sort of resolve. I know that there are other committee members that have some questions at this time, and I'm going to open it up to the members of the House and the Senate. And bear in mind that we are reflecting the views, again, of our constituents. And this is the other side of the story. Senator Ray?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the commission, I represent a cooperative Glacier Highway Electric Association, which opted out of the public utilities regulations to an election of its members as provided by 4205711H, I believe it is. And then it goes on to the deregulation valve under 4205712. And I was interested in listening to some of the members of the commission and more or less saying that you are a creature of the legislature and you were appointed by us and we put you in there in your position. And yet we provide these statutes for you to go by and yet you question that statute. I think it was Mr. Weather. He said, well, I don't know. People. I'm listening to people. Well, the legislature says by statute, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, that there is a process by which cooperatives can opt out and be exempted from the provisions of this whole chapter.
Not the entire chapter, Senator.
Except for certain certification. But I mean, for the provisions of the chapter, except for certification of public convenience, right? All right. So I have a problem, as reflected by my constituency, that says now you people are trying to exert your jurisdiction over this utility again through the regulatory process. Now, how you can make regulations that would include them out when the statute says that they can't be, that they are exempt, eludes me. Now, you're trying to make proposed regulations, I guess, at the quality of service, meter measurements, is it, and engineering standards, maintenance and testing standards, the safety standards for electric plants. Well, if I'm not mistaken, with the opt-out, I believe the Department of Labor takes care of the safety standards now. It would be, if they were back in, does that mean that you people and the department would both regulate them? And then the Economic Development Department, I guess, takes care of meter measurements and maintenance and testing standards. It would seem to me that the only jurisdiction that you people, by statute, are allowed, and this means that you are sneaking in the back door by regulation, says it. The only jurisdiction that you are allowed over the Public Utilities Commission that are have opted out and that are exempt is in the service area, or the size of the service area, for the issuance of certificates of public convenience. Yes, sir?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ray, you're partially correct in what you said.
Mr. Weatherly, do you have your...
I have it on forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As long as you can...
They're also covered under AS 4205271. I believe the it ends the deregulation part takes it up to 281. And under AS 4205271, modifications, suspension, or revocation of certificates, and there is a series of elements in built into the statute there that if someone came to us with a complaint on a deregulated utility. I mean, really severe complaint. Maybe the Department of Labor, they found a safety standard violation, something was completely severe. The commission could move for a decertification, a revocation. The point that I was trying to make with regards to listening to all, but as I said before, I have a predisposition that as far as the intent of the legislature was to exempt them, totally. Except for the certification. And that's the way I read it. But it was brought to my attention that there is a problem with 271 and the interpretation of 271 as it applies to the deregulated utilities. And that's what I was trying to state.
Can I get it to you? Well, that's fine, Mr. Willoughby, but I don't know where your legal background is. I don't know if you have a legal background.
None.
And I don't know if you know anything about the legislative process. But the provisions of 711 and 712 came in after 281. They came in after, and those exemptions were noted by the legislature at that time. In other words, the legislature said, forget what we told you in 281, and listen to what we're telling you now in 711 and 712. We're going to allow these people to opt out, and here's how they opt out. So, if there was a complaint about standard of operation, or you could take it to consumer protection, you could take it to the Department of Labor if it had anything to do with the safety standards, or you could take it to economic development for meter measurements and maintenance and testing standards or any of the rest of those. You have to understand that when the legislature says, get away from there, leave these people alone, that's what we tell you to do, that's what we want you to do. I mean, there's a lot of things that the legislature does that I don't agree with. And they do some strange things to the business that I was in that I didn't like. But at the same time, until there is a change in the statutes, I would think that you people, certainly, you're above the average intelligence, but you've shown that through your presentations, which were wonderful. It justified your existence very well. But you have to understand that when the legislature tells you to do something, you're supposed to do it. You can argue with us, and you can come to us and say, we want you to amend that and put a proviso in that in case these certain things happen, we'll go ahead and jump in there again. That's fine. That's the legislative process. But until we tell you to get back in there, I would suggest that you stay out of there. Why do you want to regulate these people? After you knew that they were out once, why do you want to come back and do it again?
I don't, Senator.
Well, why does anybody on the board? Does anybody on the board want to do it?
Senator, I will speak to that. The issue that came to the commission is, should there be any standard in regard to service and safety that only certificated utilities must comply with? Or once we issue this certificate and something goes really wrong, for instance, let's take the example of Cold Bay. Do we just say, I'm sorry, we can't do anything about it? We believe, Senator, and you're giving us guidance, and we're all here listening to you, we believe this was a legitimate issue to put on the table. It is only proposed. If, in fact, the legislature wants to say, absolutely no, stay away, fine, we'll do it. But we felt, as regulators who are granting certificates, and saying that today an entity is fit, willing, and able to provide the service, what happens in the area, particularly of safety? And that is our concern, because frankly it has come to us. But, Senator, assuming that your interpretation is right, and that's the intent, and it's appropriate that it be reviewed, and we have postponed the hearing that was scheduled this month. It will not be until June. And if you give us that guidance, I will tell you that we will go by your guidance. But we felt it was a legitimate issue to put on the table.
That's fine, and I appreciate your concern. However, right or wrong, indifferent or not, the law very clearly tells you what you're supposed to do. It tells here exemptions. The provisions of this chapter do not apply. Do not apply. To a cooperative organized under AS 1025, and it goes on and says that, well, it says that they may elect to be exempt from the provisions of this chapter if they, by deregulation ballot, say that they want to be on it. So that's the law. Now, if you have anybody to blame, everybody else blames us. You might as well blame the legislature because of the oversight we didn't take care of the public. But there was a reason for that, and I think that if you go back, I'm not going to take up the time. It was just the reason for allowing these people, the co-ops, to opt out, was because they didn't want you meddling in on their business. I guess that's as plain as it comes down to. They didn't want you meddling in on it.
So I would say, until you get a statutory direction or a change in the law that tells you what you should do, if you have recommendations for changes in the law, my office is open for them, and you can come down there and justify a proposal for an amendment to the existing law. I'll put it in for you. I'm not imagining by putting in something for the good of the public. That's what I'm here for. Now, if I could just ask you one other question, if I might, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the courtesy and the opportunity to ask you one question about your budget. Now, in your proposed budget for 1985, is that the one we're talking about here? Were you asked for $985,000, or is that this year's operating budget?
What page are you, Senator?
17 on here. On the audit. That's for this year.
I believe that it's FY85, Senator.
That's the year we're in right now, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, you asked for $800,000 over and above in program receipts.
That's correct.
Now, could you elucidate and tell me what the $500,000 in contractual services that you intend to use that in contractual services? Could you tell me what that $500,000 increase over last year was for contractual services? Is this for consultants? And if so, to do what?
First of all, Senator, these are not our numbers, and I do not have our budget document here with me, and maybe Mr. Farley can, we're going to have to use the corporate memory on this, but some of the majority of the program receipts in 1985, I think approximately $300,000 to $400,000, are used in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System proceeding. The others, we have an Alaskom rate and rate redesign proceeding, and Jack, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's around $200,000 we are estimating. In addition, our court reporter services come out of that figure, and that is approximately $50,000 a year.
Well, the increase, Caroline, is what I'm talking about. The last year you spent $765,000 in contractual services, which I assume had the court stenography or whatever it was in there. What I'm asking for is because my constituents have asked me, they're worried, and they're highly concerned that you're going to hire a bunch of consultants to come in and to propose more rules and regulations for people that you don't have any statutory authority over.
Senator, because again, these are Division of Legislative Audit. This is not the way my budget happens to be. As a matter of fact, I may have my notes from the budget hearing. But Jack, I don't know whether you can.
What they were concerned on, Caroline, if I can continue, is that for the 2 years previous to that, you got $100,000 in program receipts, mm-hmm. and the budget was possibly a holding budget, if you might say, was a holding budget, with a cost of living escalator or something this very close to it. This year, you've gone backwards a little bit in the general fund expenditures, but you've gone up by $800,000 in program receipts. Now, the program receipts, where do they come from? From the public? Directly from the public?
Sir, the program receipts are in effect a loan from the state of Alaska. And this gets into an area that I know you're interested in. If the commission does not have the resources, either as far as expertise or people to do the job, we can do one of two things. We can tell the utilities and pipelines, I'm sorry, we can't take your filing until we have the money and our regulations so provide, or we can make other financial arrangements. The financial arrangements that we have made over the past four fiscal years have been to receive a program receipt appropriation. That appropriation is put in a restricted fund. It is specifically to be used to either supplement the staff or provide additional staff where the commission does not have the expertise. Frankly, I can't answer your question because I think the 84 number's wrong. But it's not my number. But, Senator, I will provide the answer to you.
Okay.
I also want you to know that the commission doesn't go off and just say, oh, we're going to hire a consultant to do this. We have to go through every bureaucratic process that there is through the Department of Administration authority to negotiate in order to use those monies.
But last year, during the period of this audit, there were 6 contracts that there were an error because you didn't use that procedure. That was already shown. And I'm not going to get into that because I know that you have your own problem. But what I'm reading here, and as a member of some 15 or 16 years of the Finance Committee, he's worked, what you're doing is you're increasing the personal services by $210,000, which would estimate that you're putting on 2 or 3 more new people there. And the contractual services, you're raising it 500 and some thousand. And this is the place, I don't know what you're going to do with it. And that's the question that I have. If I knew, and I'm sorry that I don't know, it was just brought to my attention that that was one of the concerns because of the contractual mania, I guess you'd call it, of the board that keeps hiring these consultants to find out something.
Senator?
And some of the people don't want it. They feel that those program receipts come directly from them in charges or
I understand.
Increase in rates, et cetera, so they have to pay it. Now, that's... I'm the conduit that they're telling me, and I'm just going out to
Senator, on page 478 of our budget, and I was given our budget document because I didn't think this figure was correct. In FY84, the contractual was $1,745, and FY85, it's $1,322. That's in our budget document.
Well, then I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, we had to get budget and audit back there to validate their figures here. Their figures are entirely different than what they had.
Thank you, Senator Ray. That was a concern there that I had as well. Mr. Jensen, do you have any? Come forward, please. Do you have any indication there as to where Budget and Audit received these figures?
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I can go on is title of the title of the page, and that is a summary of Budget Act appropriations for 83, 84, and 85. This is not the expenditures. This would be a summary of the Budget Act appropriations themselves. Oh, the numbers that she just got through reading, they're so low that I would think that she left out the last 3 digits.
Right, FY85. FY84, $1,745,000 for contractual. FY85, $1,322,000 under contractual. See, we're not in sync at all.
Well, Mr. Chairman, again, this would be the fiscal year appropriations. Now, I don't know if your numbers include revised programs or expenditures.
The 84 is stated in this actual. Of course, 85 are not complete yet. So,
are you looking at actual expenditures there?
In 84, yeah.
Okay.
The books have been closed in 84, so we can look at
rather than to go back and forth and try to reconcile this. Suppose that the audit people get together with the commission people and have those figures ready by tomorrow so we can see exactly what we're talking about. Would that be better than trying to reconcile that?
Well, I think so. The way it looks right now, and I guess the concern I have in mind there is that the Anchorage section of the budget and audit did perform the audit in there with the office, which is in Anchorage, and it seems to me there, at least with the budget documents in front of them, that there should have been more accurate figures in regards to this. Mr. Jensen, maybe it's a possibility that you and Mr. Farley can get together and get this thing straightened out.
Mr. Chairman, certainly we can.
Okay. Why don't you just remain right there, just in the event that other questions come up. Senator Ray, do you...
thank you for the courtesy, Mr. Chairman, and also for the Houseman.
So thank you, Senator Ray. There were other House members that had some questions, and Representative Kopanen?
Thank you. I have some relatively minor questions. I realize that there are questions that have to be resolved, and perhaps there are refinements that we must make to statute, especially since 79 was the last time it was looked at, and that to a certain degree the agency would be looked on as much a protection for the utilities against a run-wild legislature sometimes, or court system. I can see that, you know, it cuts both ways. So, however, I have just minor picky questions. In terms of the topical reference problem, have you got your findings, your cases, and regulations entered on state computer or system, or do you have your own micro mini computer set up or anything like that?
I would ask Mr. Farley to respond to that.
We have been requesting funds to put these past decisions on the computer. It's just not a matter of adding the decision. It's also the key wording of the decision and the topics and how to handle that. And that's something that we were requesting funds for professional help to do. Public utility reporters.
I think the issue is the computer, the kind of computer. Mark, maybe.
Well, let me speak to that.
Do you have access to the state computer system, or do you have to get your own?
No, we have a mini computer now, and we have been working for several years with an extensive plan of upgrading that mini. We were saturated on our productivity once we went into the computer area, went off of the map. So we saturated that computer and have funds and have a proposal in for, which has been approved to go off the bid for an upgrade of the computer, a new system. But once we get that in, then the second phase clearly has to be the software development, the system development for the type of system that Kathy was and the auditors were talking about.
But though the software for that kind of thing has existed for a dozen years, I mean, you don't have, these aren't enormously elaborate systems. In fact, you can be using it as a typewriter right now.
Well, the problem I have with some of the systems that I have seen, I do not believe that they're going to address our needs unless you get into the very expensive ones that are put in by West and some of these others. But that's something we really haven't gotten into with regards to costing out the systems yet.
There's one additional problem, and that is actually going back through all of the orders that have been written by the commission. And
right, I realize that, you know, that's one of them. Yeah. But you know, at some point when the question began to occur to you, you could have started putting.
Well, we did, Representative. We way back when we were talking about microfilming. We've been studying this thing for years, and there is no clear consensus as to how we get there from here.
Representative,
do you have access to the Department of Administration's computer, since you work in large measure with the Department of Administration?
Under the new system, we will tie into the Department, I believe the Department of Administration computer. It will be IBM compatible. We are on a deck right now, and we'll probably be going to another type of computer which will have us IBM compatible. It won't necessarily be
IBM. What are you using currently?
Pardon me?
What did you refer to? What are you using currently?
We're using a deck right now.
I see. Okay, thank you. And then the whole thing about filing format that you mentioned, do you use a sort of, do you have available, especially for the smaller utilities, some sort of boilerplate rate filing format or checklist, or do they have to come up sui generis with their forms?
We do have sample filings available for utilities. We have had those since very shortly after I became chief of the Flanders and Charles section. We have sample rate cases and have tried to help the smaller utilities with the preparation of their cases when necessary.
If I could add to that, our regulations also set forth quite specifically what information should be filed in a rate proceeding to assist utilities in knowing what they have to tell us to meet their burden of proof. So they've got that list, plus, as Kathy indicated, some samples, so they know in what form to put it.
Application form on which they fill in the blank, fold tab A in the slot B.
Pardon?
A sort of application form where you fold tab A in the slot B.
Well, we haven't gotten that sophisticated, but we do have something somewhere.
Thank you.
I could eventually see a point in time where the small utilities, data processing and access to the computer, to keep the hackers off of it, could input that data, have the format on their screen, and input it directly, and eliminate a lot of the problems that we have right now.
The reason I bring this all up is that, you know, I wish to try to understand what the problems are, and I can see that in 1979 a lot of this wasn't available, but a lot of it has come available, and there's a good deal on the, shall we say, arguments both ways seem to be sort of beside the point at the current time. If, you know, you had a system in place, or at least were beginning well on the system, and that it had nothing much to do with statute, but just wanting to know what the response is in this regard and what you're looking at in the future to meet with this contingency, especially since many of these programs now and materials have gone down in cost. I can see the reason for being IBM compatible, but that's not necessarily even the cheapest or best way to go nowadays.
Well, the only reason we want to be IBM compatible is to access the state system. The state is IBM. The mainframe computers are IBM.
Right.
And that's what we want to be able to access is and to offload our memory with all of the stuff we're taking up there now, stuff that we can dump onto the on the state computer for storage. Deload our computer.
Well, I've noticed in other areas that various sections of the state and the legislature have paid enormous prices for consultant help when actually what they needed was somebody just to type away at the computer and load it. And I hope that you're looking at that aspect of cost very carefully. Thank you.
I'll say that we do about 90% of our computer work in-house. We have an occasional systems analyst that comes in. We are fortunate to have a lady on staff who is not only outstanding, she is brilliant and has done a great deal of our systems design and programming. She's one of our engineers.
I would like to also add, Representative Caponin, that we this was a recommendation made in 1979 to which we concurred. We have asked for monies every year. 1 year they told us to put it in the operating, and then that year they said, no, we made a mistake, please put it in the capital. And it's been a little bit of a seesaw. We have asked every year, and we have not received.
I want my own.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to go through a couple more questions here, and then I'd like to take about a five-minute break just shortly, and then we'll get back to it. But Representative Collins has been waiting for a while, or patiently, for her question. Representative Collins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question in regard to safety, because that's an area that I know something about. You stated that there were some safety problems there, and the only thing you could do is go in and take care of them. And I'm curious as to why the state and federal OSHA regulations would not apply in these settings.
Well, I'm not quite sure. The Department of Labor, in the past, where they have found complaints, have fined the utilities. In the case of Cold Bay, there were OSHA violations out there, and they were fined. But we're talking about more drastic measures on the commission.